Laudator Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. Coming up on today's program, Papal Audience. Pope Benedict looks at the figure of the 12th century abbot St. Peter the Venerable during his Wednesday General Audience. Somalia Spotlight. One of the participants at the Synod of Bishops for Africa tells us more about the situation in the troubled African nation of Somalia that has been in a state of civil war for nearly 20 years. And Stopping the Transmission. A conference in Rome this week looks at how to prevent pregnant women who are HIV positive from passing on the AIDS virus to their babies. And we talk to one of the leading experts in this field from Catholic Relief Services. Here in the Vatican, Pope Benedict focused on the figure of the 12th century abbot St. Peter the Venerable of Cluny during his Wednesday General Audience. Irene Lagan reports.
Speaking to tens of thousands of pilgrims gathered in St. Peter's Square this Wednesday morning, Pope Benedict said despite his pressing responsibilities and frequent travels in the service of the Church, Peter maintained a contemplative spirit, deep inner tranquility, rigorous asceticism, and a capacity for warm friendships.
His ability to combine love of God with sincere love of neighbor found expression in a lively sense of the Church. He urged all the members of Christ's body to be concerned for the trials and difficulties of the universal Church, and he expressed an interest in those outside the Church, specifically Jews and Muslims, in ways which were remarkable for his day.
The Holy Father said prayer stood at the heart of Peter's theology and spirituality, which were nourished by the monastic liturgy and meditation on the mysteries of Christ's life.
At Cluny, he introduced the Feast of the Transfiguration and composed its prayers centered on the contemplation of the glorious face of Christ. By his ability to combine prayer and contemplation with love of neighbor and a commitment to the renewal of society, Peter the Venerable reflected the Benedictine ideal and serves as an example to Christians today in their efforts to live holy and integrated lives in our often stressful society.
The Holy Father also had special greetings for English-speaking pilgrims on hand.
I offer a warm welcome to the English-speaking pilgrims present to this audience, including the pupils and staff from St. Andrew's High School, Eastwood, Scotland, and also school and university groups from England and Norway. May our visit to Rome be a time of deep spiritual renewal. Upon all of you, invoke God's blessings of joy and peace.
I'm Irene Lagan.
Bad governance, by and large, can be termed the cancer of Africa. That was the comment made this week by a leading African cardinal at the month-long Synod of Bishops for Africa that is taking place in the Vatican. During their reflections on the Synod's theme of reconciliation, justice and peace, the issue of bad governance in Africa and proposals for trying to tackle it have been the focus of several interventions by participants at the Synod. An African nation that is often described as a failed state because of its endemic violence and lawlessness is Somalia. Situated in the Horn of Africa area, Somalia has been without a proper functioning central government for nearly 20 years and is currently racked by fighting between a UN-backed interim government and Islamist rebel groups. So why has Somalia become one of the world's most violent and unstable countries? And just how much are the themes being discussed at the Synod pertinent to the situation on the ground in that African nation? Well, to find out more, I spoke to one of the participants at the Synod who is based in the Horn of Africa area and has lived in Somalia, Monsignor Giorgio Bertin, Bishop of Djibouti and Apostolic Administrator of the Diocese of Mogadishu. I began by asking Bishop Bertin what has struck him most about the discussions so far during this synod.
Well, it has been, in a particular way, the intervention of Cardinal Napier when he spoke about silent coup d'etat. And by that, he referred to what was happening in many African countries where you have presidents who transform the country into a kind of one-party system. They speak about democracy sometimes, but then practically everybody who has different ideas from him or from his party, they are considered as enemy of the country. That's why he has been speaking about this silent coup d'etat, that is when a man, or a party sees the whole power within a given country.
In fact, I gather that several of the interventions have focused on what we could call this issue of bad governance in Africa. In fact, I gather that one synodal father called it a cancer in Africa, and it's helped to explain why there's so much poverty there. You are the apostolic administrator of the Diocese of Mogadishu, said to be the most dangerous capital in the world, and Somalia is often described as a failed state and could be said by many to epitomise bad governance. Do you agree that bad governance is at the root of Somalia's problems, or are there many other issues?
Yes, I agree that the immediate causes for this failed state has been bad governance, particularly during the last, 10 years of the governance of President Mohamed Siad Barre, who was described as a dictator. But of course, I always say that the root causes of what is happening in Somalia is also cultural. That is, in Somalia,
the clans?
Clans, certain traditions, the so-called tradition of democracy is something totally new for them. Therefore, I speak about cultural causes, cultural roots of this situation of a failed state. Well, there was a kind of democracy, but democracy within the clan, within the tribe, not democracy within a state, which has been an invention, I would say, of the colonial powers. That's why there is a real difficulty, this transition from a pastoral democracy at the level of a clan, then all of a sudden having in their hands a state which has been manipulated and taken into the hands of one man, and I would say practically one clan, that has caused the problems of Somalia, according to my opinion.
I gather there have been no fewer than 15 international conferences trying to bring peace to Somalia. Why is it so difficult to achieve peace here?
Honestly, I also do not know why. Perhaps because the organizers from the international community were themselves a little bit divided. Or perhaps also because they had themselves another agenda. And most surely because of a real lack of leadership from the Somali side. Who is really representing the Somali people? It has been difficult to find the real representatives.
What about the role of the Catholic Church in trying to alleviate the suffering and help those who are affected by this humanitarian emergency in Somalia? What role can it play?
Well, let us say, on the spot, on the place, a very limited role, given the situation of a country without authority and given the situation, particularly in central southern Somalia, of Islamist groups, fanatic Islamist groups. So the open presence of the Catholic Church would be seen as a kind of provocation. So we are at the moment officially as Caritas. There is a presence of Caritas Switzerland in Somaliland and of Trokera from Ireland in the Gedo region, partially, in fact, which is a region near the border with Ethiopia and Kenya.
But you're saying that where the Islamist rebel groups are strong, it's too dangerous for Catholic
groups. Yeah, it's too dangerous. Otherwise, the other way I've been following during these last years has been to work through friends I personally know or through some institutions. And that we have done for the last 2 years, for instance, Islamic Relief, which is an NGO, an Islamic NGO in Great Britain. We realized that it was impossible for us, for security reasons, to be present. So, since we had the funds, we collaborated with them, with Islamic Relief, which was indicated to us, in fact, through the services of CAFOD, and through friends whom we know are honest people, and therefore there is a presence of the church, I would say, through Islamic organizations, but who are open-minded, or through Somali friends, who are Muslims, of course. This is putting into practice what we call the dialogue of works.
Now, another of the problems that Somalia faces, or rather a problem in Somalia that, in fact, is affecting the West, and so, of course, it's sitting up and taking notice, is the problem of piracy off its coast. That is going to be a very difficult problem to solve because presumably it's desperate poverty and violence and insecurity that is driving these men to take up piracy because it's the lure of easy money. How difficult would it be, in your opinion, to solve this problem?
Well, to those who have been putting to me this similar question, I've been always saying that, well, yes, probably we must intervene also with these different warships which are staying there. There are, I guess, at least 10 countries who are present with warships. But I always said that we'll probably not be able to solve the problems unless we solve the problems on the land.
Indeed.
We should not be simply content of saying, well, we have saved from piracy a certain number of ships, commercial ships. I would say, yes, but the problem will continue unless we solve the problems on the land.
Do the Somali people sometimes feel forgotten, their plight is forgotten by the outside world? Or do they in fact feel that perhaps some of the part of the problem is due to past international interventions?
I guess that there is a great number of people who feel forgotten. And I think here, in a particular way, those who are directly suffering. And they are the majority of people.
And are they right to feel forgotten?
I would say, in a certain way, yes. In a certain way, not. According to my opinion, Somalia was not forgotten. But it is true that perhaps we have not paid the attention it deserved. There was less preoccupation. If I think about the mass media, well, the mass media, international mass media, have been concentrating on the Palestinian-Israel conflict, on Iraq and on Afghanistan. So, not really forgotten, but on the other hand, not really having that continuous attention that it was necessary to have for Somalia.
Okay. Looking at the wider situation in the whole Horn of Africa area, I mean, much of it is being crippled by drought. I read a recent report that said thousands of people are starving to death in Eritrea because of the lack of rain over the last year. Is that true? And how serious is the situation?
Yeah, the situation is really serious. Between Eritrea, Djibouti, where I'm staying, Somalia, and parts of Ethiopia, I have seen also recently parts of Kenya. Well, drought is a reality.
I mean, what's the landscape like? Can you paint me a picture?
Yes, it is almost, let's say, desertic, or the prevailing color is yellow. At the beginning of September, I went to Nairobi. And when I landed at the international airport, well, I saw that the grass was completely dry around there. So it meant that really is affecting different parts of the Horn of Africa.
And are there a lot of people then that are at risk of dying because of this?
Yeah, particularly the pastoralists. Because if I think about Somalia and Djibouti, there are not many farmers. There are only two rivers in southern Somalia, but the rest is a land suitable only for pastoralists. And they heavily depend on the rain.
I was speaking to Bishop Bertin, Apostolic Administrator of the Diocese of Mogadishu.
Let's join our hands today. Let us fight HIV.
If an HIV-positive woman becomes pregnant, there is a 1 in 3 chance that she will pass the AIDS virus to her baby, unless she is treated with antiretrovirals. In a wealthy Western nation, that chilling scenario for the newborn baby can be easily avoided because antiretroviral treatment is readily available and affordable. But it's a very different story in many areas of poor developing countries, where pregnant women often simply don't have the access to the life-saving medical treatment. As a result, their baby runs the real risk of becoming infected and then not making it through childhood. So how can we do more to help prevent mother-to-child transmission of HIV/AIDS and improve access to testing and treatment for children living with HIV? That's the aim behind a 3-day conference organised by the US Embassy to the Holy See and Caritas Internationalis that opened today in Rome. The conference began with presentations from world leaders in the field of AIDS prevention and treatment. Among those experts giving presentations was Michel Brommelsek of Catholic Relief Services, who manages a project entitled AIDS Relief that seeks to provide antiretroviral therapy to underserved people in 10 countries. She told me why this conference is so useful and important.
This conference is very important. One of the things that we have found in Africa, especially with the AIDS epidemic, is that we have been very successful at getting adults on treatment. We have been much less successful at getting children on treatment. And it's very important to raise awareness that children need to be reached in Africa and they need to be on treatment.
Now, you said about this lesser success in treating children. Roughly, how many newborn babies stand to get infected if their mother is HIV positive and no treatment is given to them?
Yeah, the general statistics are that about 1 baby out of 3 will get infected at childbirth if the mother has no treatment. But of course, what you have to understand is that if the mother goes on and breastfeeds, the risk to the child continues. The challenge is that we really can't stop asking women in Africa to stop breastfeeding, even if they're HIV positive and have no treatment, because for children in Africa, the biggest risk is diarrhea in the first 2 years. So if the woman has no access to clean water, and she obviously often has no money
to buy the formula
yeah,
milk.
Yeah, the formula is incredibly expensive in Africa, then she really has no choice. So it is very important to get the mother on antiretroviral therapy for AIDS as quickly as possible in her pregnancy, and then we protect her and the child.
And that's effective, is it? 100%?
That's extraordinarily effective, yes. If we put the mother on treatment, meaning full-time antiretroviral therapy, she will have almost no risk of transferring the disease to her child, either during birth or when she's breastfeeding, much less. Instead, many times people give single dose naviprin, and that is not as effective at protecting both the mother and the child.
And how many mothers in developing countries, particularly in Africa, are not getting these life-saving antiretrovirals?
Yeah, it does depend on the country that they're in. Some countries have been more effective than others at getting treatment to general populations so that women who are giving birth can get access. But unfortunately, some countries have not been very effective, and this is really hurting the ability of the entire community to really prevent mother-to-child transmission.
Okay, let's talk first of all about those success stories. It's always nice to have some good news when it comes to this issue. So what are some of the success stories where the countries have really managed to get quite a high proportion of mothers taking this treatment to prevent them passing on it to their newborn baby?
Well, one example of a country that's been very successful is Rwanda. And in Rwanda, we also have patients who are in our program, and the Rwandan government is very committed to reaching women during pregnancy and to reaching the general population. So in those cases, if you were a mother who was pregnant, you would be going to be checked before you gave birth in maybe an antenatal clinic. And during that time, you would be given a regular HIV/AIDS test. So you would be tested and you would know your status status during your pregnancy. And then you as a woman, you could make the decision to really encourage your family to be involved and also take responsibility for protecting your child. And the wonderful thing about Rwanda is that they really have provided access to treatment. What we found in our program is that people really do want to get treated. When we started, you know, we had very few people in the beginning.
They were very mistrustful?
Well, you had a lot of people who, because of stigma that they were afraid to be tested and they were afraid to know their status. I moved to Zambia about 8 years ago. When I came to Zambia, there was no drugs in the entire country, really, unless you were maybe, you know, a minister or someone with really enough money to travel to South Africa to get drugs. There were no drugs available to the general population. And as a Catholic organization, what we really did was help people die with dignity. We would go and work with a Catholic diocese. We would work with a hospice, and we would help those people die well, to die with dignity. But we weren't helping people live because there really weren't any drugs. But once drugs came into the country and were generally available, you were really almost following the story of Lazarus. You were bringing people back to life. You had people who looked like a cadaver, who were laying in a bed, who were ready to just say goodbye to their family, who after a couple months of treatment were up and around and ready to go back to work.
So a really dramatic transformation.
Absolutely dramatic.
Well, we've talked about the success stories, but as you said earlier, there are some countries where it's not so good. You know, many mothers are not getting this treatment to prevent them passing on HIV to their kids. Where are some of these countries where it's most difficult, the situation?
You know, instead of speaking of countries, I think what's probably more accurate is to say, where in a country would you find it very hard as a mother to get treatment? And in many cases, it's in the rural areas. It's not uncommon to find that if you go to a capital city, that you can find all kinds of people very interested in providing treatment to adults and to children and to women who are pregnant. But it's when you go out to the rural areas, to the remote parts of a country, where you find so little to serve people in need. And this is one thing I believe that the Catholic Church does so well, that our partners in the grant that I work on are faith-based organizations for the most part, about 75% Protestant and Catholic, including Muslim organizations, who really have a commitment to reaching people in need. And in the often working in these remote rural areas where no one else is, and really serving that population. And I think that's what we feel like we bring in this grant, is a hope for people in those remote areas. Because otherwise, if you're a mother in those places, you really have almost no information about treatment. And in addition, you have, even if you know that there's treatment, you might not be able to reach it for maybe walking maybe 20 kilometers.
Let's turn to these kids who do develop HIV because their mother was HIV positive when she was pregnant. What would be the average life expectancy for these children? How many of them, for instance, go on to develop full-blown AIDS if they don't get any kind of treatment?
Well, there is normally a natural progression of anyone who contracts HIV, that in approximately 7 to 10 years, they will have full-blown AIDS. It sometimes comes quite a bit earlier in children because there's many things that make being a young child in Africa difficult. Some of them are issues like diarrhea. You have poor access to food, so you're often malnourished or stunted. So all of these factors may make it difficult for your body to really fight off the transition from having just the virus to having AIDS. But let's say you're a lucky child and you actually are in a place where you can get treatment, and maybe, you know, you have a grandmother who's caring for you because maybe your parents died, and that grandmother is willing to take you for treatment. If you are on treatment, you can often live a full life. You can often live the full lifespan for people in your country if you're on treatment, because we've gotten so much better at figuring out how to do treatment for children over the last 5 years. We've really figured out how to treat children over time, because it's much more complicated to treat children because they grow so fast. And these drugs are calibrated to their body weight. But if you manage to get the drug treatment correct, that child can grow and thrive, and you won't be able to tell the positive, HIV positive, or children with AIDS in a household from the ones who aren't. What we find is that when people in Africa are given the chance, they take it and they follow the directions. They take their drugs when they need to. They don't miss doses. They disclose their status, and they actually thrive on treatment. They want that opportunity to take back their life. And when given it, they do that and they succeed.
Now, I gather you often visit some of your projects overseas. Yes. Can you tell us any memorable anecdotes, be they uplifting, poignant, tragic, moving, that illustrate the plight of these kids you come across who are struggling perhaps with HIV or AIDS?
When I first went to Zambia, I was traveling out in a remote part of the country, and I met a beautiful young woman who had AIDS. And she came up to me, and she brought her daughter with her, and her daughter's name was Precious. And she was a very precious little girl. And this woman was suffering from AIDS. And the thing she said to me was, you know, I don't really mind that I'm going to have to die, but what can you do for my daughter? And I think that, in a way, is the question Africans really want to answer. They want their children to live. They want them to have access to treatment. And they want to live and care for those children. I think that's part of what we're called to do in this work, is to find ways to help families stay together, find ways for those children who are so beautiful, so talented, to really thrive. I know that the stories in Africa are sometimes overwhelming. I visited a clinic once where I met a mother. This clinic was on the border between Zimbabwe and Zambia. It was a remote Catholic mission hospital, and the doctor was touring us through the wards, and she was introducing us to some of the patients. And there was a mother who had two children with her, and one of the children looked really about 2 years old, and we were introduced to her. She was actually five, but she really had been stunted. And the challenge was that that child had HIV, and they had just finished testing her, and she was very sick. The terrible part of the story was that her mother was actually HIV negative, which meant that that young girl had contracted HIV through someone attacking her and sexually abusing her. And the stories, unfortunately, are real of how children are so vulnerable. And I think there are so many risks to children in Africa and risks to children today that I think we really have to take seriously the call to really put them on treatment, to find ways to help them survive into adulthood in a positive way. Right now in our grant, we really only serve 8% of our total numbers are children. And part of our drive over the next 2 years is to really raise that percentage to a much higher number, because we feel that it is really critical to help children.
And any feedback, any particularly memorable remarks that some of the people you've helped or you've come into contact with out there have said to you?
Yeah, I think there's so many stories that pop into your mind when you think about what has happened. We got many wonderful letters from people who were just pouring out their heart to say, look, I really am alive today because of this treatment. So I think for me, it's those kind of stories that make all of this work that we do really feel worthwhile.
I was speaking to AIDS expert Michelle Brommelsek of Catholic Relief Services. Well, that's all from Vatican Radio's English program for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. Laudato Jesus Christus.